And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Where am I this week? Well, I'm actually standing in the middle of Piccadilly Circus. And if you don't know where that is, that's in the heart of London. And if you don't know where that is, well, you know, there's only so much I can do. But that's actually in England. That's where I am this week. I'm recording this program on Monday evening. Hey, check it out, a smart car. There are smart cars all over the place in this city. I'm standing right now near a fountain, very busy part of the city. Lots of fun, lots of activity going on. And despite what you may have heard in the news about all kinds of mayhem and things blowing up in London, people are obviously concerned with that, but it's not at all crimping the style of the people here as they go about their daily business and daily fun and all that kind of thing. I'm here with a couple of people. I'm here with Red Hacked, who you might know from Off the Hook, who for some reason is in London.
Hi. I'm on my way to What the Hack, and London was a stopover.
And you decided to take advantage of that by hanging out here in the middle of London for a night?
Right.
Okay, I'm also here with Russell, who listened to the show last week and met me over by Speaker's Corner on Sunday.
Hi there, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So you listened to the show, and based on that, you actually just came on down.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I knew you were going to be in London because of some of the other stuff you'd been saying in the other shows. And you happened to say where you would be, and I was going shopping in Oxford Street anyway, which is just nearby. So I thought I'd go on down, and there you were, taking video of the guys there.
And I should point out, Speaker's Corner is something that happens every Sunday morning. In this particular case, there was only one guy who was just sort of standing on a stepladder and preaching about Jesus and that kind of thing. And a bunch of people were harassing him in the crowd, yelling back and saying, well, Jesus was a socialist and things like that. And it just sort of got completely crazy with everybody sort of yelling back and forth. But I expected Speaker's Corner to have more speakers. It only had this guy, and then they had some other guy stand next to him and pretty much counter everything he was saying. But that was pretty much it. Have you ever seen Speaker's Corner before?
Well, no. It was nice to go along because it was my first time. It's the kind of place I wanted to go to, but you never remember on a Sunday morning. But I think there are people there when it isn't raining, and perhaps it's a bit more sunny and warm.
Yeah, it was raining pretty good, and made things a little bit damp, made things a little bit, I guess, sparsely populated. But it was fun. I'm glad you showed up, because now I have somebody to show me around. And can I say what you work for? Is it okay to say that? Oh, you work for the BBC. And you showed me around. You showed Red Hacked and myself around. It was really, really cool. I want to thank you very much for that. And I learned a lot about how the whole thing operates. And, man, it is big. It is huge. Can you give us an idea of just how big and huge it really is?
Well, it's kind of hard to put into words, really. I mean, depending on how much you want to go into it, you can literally spend like, a whole day walking around each of the buildings. And, of course, there's one for television, and then there's like two separate buildings for radio, and they're all massive. And it's so easy to get lost in any of these buildings. And if you were to list all of the buildings that are involved in producing BBC output for the nation and to a certain extent the world, it would be a long list.
Well, just to give an idea of how much BBC outputs, there are how many TV stations in this country alone that are run by BBC?
We provide about 13 on digital terrestrial television, and then there are lots of regional variations as well.
Uh-huh, and you have things like BBC Parliament, BBC World, BBC...
Yeah, well, we have Rolling News. We have two programs for children, for young and old, and then there are lots of other things we do in partnership with other people, and that BBC programs going out there on many other channels.
So there's one building for the television mostly, then there's another building just for the radio, and I think there are what, seven different national radio stations?
Yeah, that's right, and well, there's seven national radio stations plus the BBC Asian Network, which I think is also national, and so that'll be like an eighth. And we now broadcast World Service to England and Britain.
That's World Service gets broadcast to England?
Yeah, it does, only on digital. But, you know, I think it's a really nice thing to have. It's a good way to keep in contact with the news. So.
And, of course, World Service also gets broadcast all over the world. And, in fact, there's a whole building just for that because of why?
There are so many different versions. I mean, each country or each region will have their own programming in their own language to a certain extent. A lot of it is central. But, you know, you need a lot of people for each program, and obviously a lot of different people who speak different languages. So, it's a big place as well.
Interesting. Well, it's fascinating. It really is. And it's just fascinating seeing how things are done here, how things are done differently. Red Hack, what are your opinions? You've been in London now for a few hours, and what have you seen so far?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting place. We've been going around on the tube a lot. I'm a little nervous on the tube, I'm not going to lie, but it's not going to prevent me from going and riding it. I really enjoyed the tour of the BBC. That was a lot of fun. My favorite part was actually seeing the 24-hour news service being produced, seeing that studio.
So many people working there.
I know, a lot of people, and I'm assuming, news gatherers and also people controlling and mixing things.
They have an even bigger staff than Off the Wall has.
Yes.
And if you've ever gone to Off the Wall, you've seen that we have hundreds of people who work on the program, who get things together, tell me what to say. It's very scripted, very organized, but BBC puts us to shame, I have to say.
Yeah, no, definitely.
All right, well, here we are. We're in the middle of Piccadilly Circus in London. It's, I guess, about 6 o'clock in the evening or so. And what do you want to do? I guess we should walk around a little bit. Maybe go downstairs into the tube.
Perhaps.
And hope it doesn't blow up.
Yeah.
Not to make light of what's been going on, but you sort of have to just kind of cast caution to the wind and get on with your life and go places. There's something I'd like to do. And if anybody who's been to London has heard this recording at some point. It's the guy who says, mind the gap. All right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right. Basically what that means is don't fall into the train track because there's a gap between the train and the platform. And, of course, mind in England is the same thing as, I guess, beware of. Or
they also tell you to mind the doors as opposed to standing clear of the closing doors.
They tell you to mind a lot of things. Yeah, mind your manners. Mind your head. There's a low ceiling. I've seen that one. Okay, and we're descending into the what you would call the subway in New York, but what we call the underground here. And we're going to get onto a tube train. And I guess when we go in here, by the way, you'll hear all kinds of recordings. We'll try to bring you as many as possible because tube service has been disrupted severely by the various disruptions and problems that we've been having. So you'll hear all kinds of service reroutings and things like that. Also, there are posters up everywhere asking for people's help in finding some of the suspects in the attempted bombing last Thursday. And any other information for the successful bombing on the 7th. There's all kinds of reminders of the horrible thing that happened earlier in the month. Okay, what we're about to do now is we're about to go through the machine where we put our little magnetic strip card, and then we're let in. Okay, I've just successfully passed through. And now we're going to go on the Bakerloo line, is that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so we're going to go down the escalator here, long escalator. And I should point out that while we're going down on the left and people are coming up on the right, which I guess makes sense, people pass on the left, though. We stand on the right while people pass us on the left. I still think that's wrong. I still think that they should be passing on the right since the British drive on the left. We should be standing on the left. They should be passing on the right. It's just a pet peeve. I'm sorry to bring it up while we're going down the escalator here. And, you know, we are going down pretty deep. These tubes go down pretty deep under the ground, don't they?
Yeah, some of them have to have escalators. Lifts. And if the lifts are out of action, they have to close that station just because there are so many stairs, they're not allowed to let people use them.
And these things served as bomb shelters during the war, too. People would come down here during the Blitz and have a grand old time, I guess, waiting for it to all be over. Okay, so we've come down the escalator. Now we're going to go down a second level of the escalator as well, just to give you an idea of how deep it is. And it's getting rather warm, too. As we get closer to the Earth's core, that kind of thing happens. Another interesting thing about the underground here is that when a train is coming, you can actually feel the wind. You feel the wind hitting you in the face before the train actually shows up. And I guess, do you understand the wind principle, why it hits you so hard?
Well, one thing I noticed when I was in New York is that you're often walking along and there's a big grate in the sidewalk or perhaps in some grass, which seems to go down to the underground system. Here we don't have any of those kind of grates going out into the open air, so it's kind of just like a load of pistons pushing it around.
And that's responsible for the air hitting us whenever a train is approaching.
I think so.
And by the way, we just missed a train, which I'm rather upset about. But, okay, according to this, the next train will be here in 4 minutes. They have this nice little sign that tells you when the next train is coming. And that's something we have not yet mastered in New York, but will soon.
One great thing I like about the London subway is that, unlike in New York, where if you want to get from one track to the other, it may either be impossible because you're at a station where you'd have to go out and then swipe back in, or you have to go downstairs and back up. Here, one way is on one side, then there's a little short tunnel to the other side, and they're pretty much right next to each other, very easy to get back and forth. So, for example, earlier today, when we missed a stop, well, we just went to the next stop, walked across.
Yeah, we weren't paying attention. We were having a long conversation, and suddenly we realized, hey, this is our stop, and there's not nearly enough time for us to get off the train.
Right.
So we said, well, why don't we just stay on another stop and go back? And all we had to do was get off the train, walk across the platform, not go up any stairs or anything like that.
In New York, you'd have to wait 4 or 5 stops.
Fill out forms, get permission from various entities, and yeah, it's very simple. I don't think it's always that simple, but it was in this particular case. I should point out also that we've come down another flight of stairs after the 2 flights of escalators, so we're pretty deep down. Red Hack, do you notice anything different about the tracks here? They certainly don't look like New York tracks, do they?
Well, they're not nearly as dirty.
Well, no, but I'm saying as far as the way, there's like a rail down the middle as well. And then it goes down rather deep. It goes down another foot between the 2 rails.
Yeah, well, I don't quite understand how it works, but... I assume it's just the same. Maybe the middle rail is the electric.
Well, I think
one?
If you touch the rail in the middle... or maybe it's just, there's actually 4 rails. There's a rail, which I assume is the 3rd rail, which you don't want to touch. Then there are the 2 rails that the track goes on. Then there's a fourth rail going down the middle.
Or perhaps in this case, one of the rails is ground and one of the rails is high, as opposed to in New York, where it's one rail, but there's like 2 levels to it.
So which rail don't you want to touch?
Well, you'd have to touch both. So here they're separate. They're apart.
Okay.
So you'd have to grab one and grab the other.
To be electrocuted.
Right. So, I assume. I don't know how this works.
All right, we probably want to stand back because I think the train is... Oh, no, it's 2 minutes. 2 minutes to the train.
This is my guess. I think you should talk to Russell about that.
Well, I know the reason that some places for electric trains, they have only 3 rails, 2 for the wheels and 1 for the electricity. And to go back, the return to ground for the electricity is it uses the actual rails which the wheels use. But apparently that was going to cause corrosion or something with pipes and all that kind of stuff when it was built. So that's why we've got 4 rails. And I'm assuming one's kind of positive and one's negative, so you don't really want to touch either of them.
Right.
Makes sense to me. Okay, well, we're waiting for the train. We're going down on the Bakerloo line, I believe. I noticed also there's some letters on the ground say, mind the gap. So we might actually hear the recording here. But remember, it has to be the man's voice. They have several different recordings. I just want to make sure that we get that one because that's the classic one. That's the one that we're after.
And that guy as well, he's very insistent. It's not a request. It's very much he's shouting at you, you've done something very wrong. So.
Absolutely. Okay, and again, we're at the Piccadilly Circus underground station. And once we head to Embankment, I believe, is the station that has the recording. That's 2 stops away. We'll hear that, and then we'll move on, I think, to another station. I'm actually surprised that we haven't heard any more recordings about the service disruptions, because when I was coming through here today, earlier, there were recordings every couple of seconds. We'll probably hear some.
Security announcements also, all the time.
The train is approaching now, and it has a very odd shape to it, which we can't possibly show you on the radio. And this is a crowded train. This is pretty densely packed. Hopefully people will... permission to do what?
We're recording.
I don't know if we needed permission to record. It's just audio.
So you're on an underground.
You can't record on the underground.
Well, filming. What are you up to?
Well, filming. No, we're doing a radio show back in New York. Actually, we're just taping.
Yeah. Does the supervisor know you're on the station? Anyone working on the station's got to have permission from the underground.
Really?
Oh.
So
if you'd like to go upstairs and report up to the supervisor.
Okay. Well, can we just leave, or do we have to talk to the supervisor?
If you're working, mate, that's what
you
have to
do. So we're from America, and all we're doing is we're recording, like, for the folks back home, this little sort of audio postcard.
Yeah. Wouldn't the same apply in America?
No. Actually, we had a big controversy about that. They wanted to make it...
This is England, mate.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so what do we do now?
Well, I'm the senior supervisor.
Okay. Will he give us permission?
I don't know.
Okay. How do we find the supervisor?
He's not working on the station. He's got to have permission, though.
Okay. So where is the supervisor? Up the escalator? Are you going to accompany the escalator, or do we just find him? Up the first level or both levels? Okay. Well, it seems like we have to get permission from the supervisor before we can continue with this. That's rather surprising, isn't it?
So close to getting on the train.
You know, if I had the condenser mic or the lapel mic that I used last time, this wouldn't be an issue because the problem is this big microphone that we're holding. But I need this for three people.
Right.
Otherwise, we won't pick up your voices.
This does remind me of the... Well, it's all to do with the health and safety regulations, and he thinks that we're actually legitimately working.
Well, we are legitimately working.
I'm not saying we're not, but because of that, they have to know that we're working so that they're covered with liable.
Okay, well, he said the supervisor's office is up here someplace. I wish he had accompanied us, because I don't really know where the supervisor is or what the supervisor looks like. I think you have to go up too.
I was going to ask him.
We might have to alter our plans, actually, because one of the other things we wanted to do was hear Big Ben ring. And how are we doing on time, as far as how much time before Big Ben actually gongs?
For the quarter to one, then we've got about 7 minutes.
And for we want the top of the hour.
Top of the hour, you got 23 minutes.
23 minutes. It might make sense to take a bus over there so we can hear the gongs of Big Ben.
Yeah, okay. If there's a bus, I just don't know the system.
Let's talk to the supervisor first and see if he gives us permission to continue with the radio show. And,
I assume that's him.
He's going down the stairs? Oh, I thought you were pointing at a guy going down the stairs. Okay. Now, we'll make sure that he doesn't know we're recording. That way, mind the step.
We're supposed to talk to the supervisor, apparently.
Yeah, we're making a recording for back home. Hi, we were told to see the supervisor because we were walking around with a tape recorder just to get permission to walk around. It's just basically for some people back home in the United States. We want to record the sounds of the underground, but if we can't do it, you know. At this moment, no. Okay, well, we had to turn the machine off while we went in there. So they said that we have to get permission from somebody else, and that's not something that's going to happen anytime soon because we have to go to an office building, which probably isn't open now. So I think probably the best thing to do is to hop on a bus. Hopefully we don't need permission to hop on a bus and use this thing. And I just spotted another smart car. That's kind of cool. So what we'd like to do is head on to head towards Westminster. So we need to find a bus that heads in that direction. I guess we're not going to hear the Mind the Gap recording. That's too bad. I was looking forward to that, but I'm sure we can find it in some other way. And right now we're looking for, I guess if we found a bus map, that would be kind of cool.
Well, I'm going to ring up.
You're going to get information. All right. Well, while this is happening, let's chat a little bit about what's been going on back home. As a result of some of the actions here in London, some of the terrorist acts, there has been moves afoot in New York City to do things like search people on the subway, conduct random searches of bags. Have you heard anything about this, Red Hack?
Yes. Supposedly, the New York City police are conducting random searches as people enter the subway system. The flaw, however, in this idea that they've had is that they seem to only be doing it at popular train stations such as Times Square, Grand Central, places like that. Because, for example, the other day I needed to go downtown and back uptown, switching trains at Times Square. I got on the train uptown. I did not see a police officer anywhere. I went down, I got off at Times Square, walked around in Times Square, well, in the station a bit, got on my other train to go wherever else I needed to go, got there, did what I had to, and then came back. Both times, passing through Times Square, both times not even seeing a police officer.
Well, the thing that really gets me is even if they do implement such a system, and you do see more policemen, and there are more searches, Well, you know, what's going to happen when someone declines a search and they leave and they go into the next station?
Right.
It seems like a pointless policy, one that can never actually accomplish anything for anybody who's paying the slightest bit of attention. Obviously, the only way, if they really think this is going to work, that they should implement it is to search people while they're on the train. But nobody is going to want to do that. And then what happens? What happens if you refuse to be searched when you're on the train already? Do you get shot like somebody just did here in London? And what a scandal that was. They wound up chasing this guy into an underground station simply because he looked suspicious. Now, keep in mind, police here don't have guns as a rule. These were ununiformed police chasing after this guy with guns. And he ran, as I think most people would do. Their response, once they caught up to him, was to shoot him in the head 5 times and kill him on the spot. The whole city is reeling from this because it's just an incredible example of the police not being in control of the situation. They're literally panicking a whole lot more than individuals are. The people of London have been incredible as far as not letting this affect them in any way, not letting this make them scared.
And why did he run?
Well, we don't know. We can't ask him, obviously, but I would suspect that having people chasing after you with guns would be motivation to run for most people.
Well, he had an expired visa also, which was a possible motivation more than, you know...
That's also possible. Maybe he did know there were cops, and he knew he had an expired visa. It's possible. I don't think he realized the kind of danger he was in. And I've seen all kinds of justifications for this being reported on the news by the police, saying things like, well, there's no other way to stop a suicide bomber. You can't shoot them in the torso because that could set off the explosives. You have to not give them, this is the crazy thing, you have to not give them any warning, because if you even say stop police, well then, they could press the button and blow themselves up. So they have a shoot first, ask questions later policy, and that's really very disturbing. And I think a lot of people are quite unhappy with that. Not only do they have to fear the terrorists, but they have to fear the police as well.
Oh, no. But the mayor said that he was an unfortunate victim of terrorism.
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to redefine what terrorism actually is, because it seems like all kinds of people are becoming victims of irrational acts, and those irrational acts aren't always coming from the people you expect them to come from. We need the police to actually be a little calmer than they are right now. All right, so are we walking down to Westminster?
I believe this is where a bus goes.
Okay, so we're going to try to catch a bus here. And hopefully we won't get into more trouble. It's unbelievable how we always get into trouble. I didn't expect that to happen. I knew video cameras were not really. I thought video cameras were okay too. But I see people taking pictures in the underground. But I guess because our equipment looks so good and professional, they must have thought that we were professional people. And we tried to convince them that we weren't. But it's just very hard when you look professional to convince people that you're not. It's a problem I've always had.
Yeah.
But of course, if we'd have got on that first train, which we missed by like 30 seconds, if that, that problem wouldn't have happened to us.
Wouldn't have happened, but then we wouldn't be having this conversation now. Yeah. See, that's how life works. You know, you miss one train, and then you're not allowed on the next one. And you wind up walking on the street. Now, there is a bus down here, because we're walking rather far. Right now, what street is this we're on?
We can get this one.
Get this bus, okay. Are we going to have to run?
No.
I try not to run when I'm on the air. And the street is crowded with people. It's very hard to get by them. Because, one thing about London is that people are constantly bumping into you. Oh, the bus just left. You couldn't have held the bus for us, huh?
It moved before I got there.
Oh, boy. All right, well, we just missed a bus. Now, can't we run up to it now? It's a red light. Let's try. All right, we're running now. Running down the street, and this is one of these buses you can jump onto the back. I apologize for the staticky noises as we run. I'm going to put the microphone down so it doesn't look like I'm recording. Okay, we're on the bus.
Phew.
Where's the guy who takes the tickets?
There may not be. Oh, no, it's the lady at the front.
Okay, so she doesn't see us. I'm going to stand facing the back, and I should point out, this is one of these open door buses, so I could jump off the bus at any time. Let me know when she's coming. Oh, she's here.
Okay.
Okay, we're going up the stairs now. Okay, so we're upstairs. It's a bit crowded. How, Russell, how far do we have to take this?
I have no idea.
Well, but it's an honest answer anyway.
I'm working it out now.
Okay, he's working it out. We're on the N19, heading towards Westminster, hopefully. The goal, again, is to hear the chimes of Big Ben.
On the hour.
I should point out something interesting about the chimes of Big Ben. Whenever you see something about London, you always hear the chimes of Big Ben, and the impression is that they resound through the entire city. And that's not true. You have to be standing about a block away in order to be able to hear it. Is that right?
I think, yeah, it's certainly quieter than they make it out to be.
I mean, we couldn't hear it in Piccadilly.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And more than a block or two away, I don't think they're able to hear it. We're supposed to show our tickets, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What is that machine? That's.
I think that just checks the Oyster cards, which are the electronic payments system.
Oyster cards? Why in God's name are they called Oyster cards?
I've heard no explanation.
My assumption would be is because you can put them in your wallet, unless it's like an oyster. It's like the center of an oyster.
Okay, interesting. She's going to be turning around and coming back, so I'm going to hide the microphone. Okay.
Is that a good
And
guess?
She's going back down the stairs, so we're safe up here. We can continue talking freely, which is something I thought we could do on the underground too, but apparently we couldn't. Okay. So,
but we can now see Big Ben, so we'll be there in a few minutes.
Okay, and what time? It's about 10:02, is that right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're getting there just about on time, so at least that part of the show will be a success.
And let's be pedantically accurate. Of course, Big Ben is the bell within the tower. The tower itself is not called Big Ben.
The tower itself is called what?
I have no idea.
Okay, well,
I think it's the clock tower of the Palace of Westminster, because it's actually part of the Houses of Parliament.
Well, I can see why nobody calls it that. All right, well, now, Red Hack, let's talk about the conference a little bit, because next week we'll probably be doing a show from the conference.
Right.
That being What the Hack, gathering of computer hackers all throughout the world who will be showing up on a field in Holland, and I guess just sort of setting up camp, literally, making a town, creating electricity, creating internet access, and this is the first one of those you're going to, right?
Yes. Essentially, it's like a shanty town of hackers. So, you know, bring a tent. I've got a tent packed with me. I've got a sleeping bag, clothes, and a laptop. So, you know, get there, set up a tent, run an Ethernet cable and some power to your tent, and, you know, go to talks.
And Russell will be giving one of those talks. Tell us what you're going to be talking about.
I'm going to be talking about digital radio. It's a big thing over, certainly in the UK and to a growing extent Europe. And it's a new way of getting radio from A to B. And it basically provides people with better reception and more choice. And it's quite a fun technology to know about from a technical point of view, but the politics behind it also warrants looking at.
Well, technically, tell us the difference between analog radio and digital radio. How would the consumer notice the difference?
Well, the first thing about digital reception is that it's exactly as broadcast, so there's no difference. It's not slightly grainy or anything. It's as it comes out of the transmitter is what you look at on your screen, which is a big difference. But also, they kind of bundle the channels up. It's more, you can fit more in the same frequencies, and it's better from a technical aspect.
So a station like what we're broadcasting on today, WUSB in Stony Brook, and various other stations that pick us up. We're getting off here? Okay. I'll continue this question as we climb down the stairs. And the beauty of these buses is you can just hop off whenever you feel like it. And let's just hop off. Well, let's not hop off now because we're moving. Although we could hop off, but it would be dangerous.
One question I have about digital radio would be, would it...
I'm hopping off. All right, we've hopped off.
Would it open? So now there's a certain number of radio frequencies that take up the spectrum. If we were to move to digital radio, would that allow for more stations within the currently available frequencies? And would that open the opportunity for more people to create stations?
Russell, can you answer that question?
In general, when people convert to DAB, you do get more channels and there's more choice. For instance, listening digitally in the UK gives you twice as much choice as you would listening via analog. And that's partly due to the way that you can compress channels using MP3-like technology. But it's also partly due to the efficiencies of the way it uses the spectrum.
Now, does it use the same spectrum or is it a totally different set of frequencies?
It's a totally different set of frequencies, yeah. It can use L-band, which is about 1.5 gigahertz that's chosen, or it can use some high VHF frequencies, which are a bit higher than the normal television signals.
Now, I'm also curious, has it been done in America the same way, or is it being done in America the same way? If we ever get digital radio, what can we expect?
Well, what they've done in America is they've taken the normal analog channels and they've put a digital signal around either side, so they're not using new frequencies. And the digital signal can kind of interfere with the analog signal. It's not really harnessing all the possibilities. But on the other hand, you will get better reception as a consequence.
Well, it's something to look forward to. Hopefully we can benefit from that. But does it increase the range of the signal at all?
Well, it's hard to say, but what you can say is that because it has error correction inbuilt in the signal, you can have a really poor reception but still get bad signal, but very good reception. It's still perfect, but it's low level. Whereas analog, it would be like hissy and you wouldn't be able to hear anything much.
So where you could maybe stick with the signal longer with analog, digital we would pretty much cut off at a certain point.
That's correct. And I'm not going to say whether you can go further with analog or digital or whatever. And one of the problems with digital, the way that we're doing it at the moment, is we're using high frequencies. High frequencies go less distance, and so there's a problem there. But you can get around that by using some of the other good things about digital radio.
Right, like, for example, you could have repeaters that repeat the exact same signal, right?
Yeah, you can. And the good thing about them is they can all be on the same frequency, so you don't have the complex choices about neighboring frequencies and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, we got a green light. We can walk across the street now. In case you're just tuning in, this is a special edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. I'm in the streets of London right now. And we're walking over towards Big Ben, so we can hear the chimes of Big Ben. Oh, we're at Big Ben. There it is, right there. We have 5 minutes until the hour of 7 o'clock in the evening. And this is being taped on Monday. Whatever day Monday is, I've sort of lost track. I've been traveling for quite some time.
25th.
Is it 25th? 25th of July, our year of the Lord, 2005. I'm still embarked on my round-the-world cruise, or journey, I guess. I just took the cruise in the QM2. That was a lot of fun. Got settled back into land mode, and I'm now wandering the streets of London. Next week, I'll be somewhere in Holland, and then points east from there. We're recording all kinds of commentary, all kinds of feedback from people. Check our webpage, www.2600.com/travel, to get updates on where we're going to be recording and what we're going to be doing. It should be a lot of fun. Now, we're right up to the building right now. Should we stop here? Is this a good place, or is there a better location?
Well, if we go to the other side of the tower, then we can see the river. So for our sake, we may as well go there. But this is fine.
Well, I think our listeners would enjoy seeing the river, too. So let's head over there. Oh, look at that. It's a huge Ferris wheel. My goodness. Such a big Ferris wheel. That could very well be the biggest Ferris wheel in the world, I think.
I think that's possible as well. I think it is.
And what's this majestic wonder of the world called?
It's called two things. It's either called...
keep it clean.
The Millennium Eye.
Okay.
And then there's another version. One of them refers to London Eye and the Millennium Wheel. That's it. Two versions.
Okay. I think most people could just call it the Eye.
Yeah, that works too.
All right. Nobody calls it the Eyesore.
No, I think people like it generally.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think if you stuck a big Ferris wheel in the middle of New York, a lot of people would have something to say about it that wouldn't be printable. But here, somehow it works. And I have to say, I don't know much about height. I don't know much about, how to judge these things. But it's pretty high. It's really high.
I think it's about 140 meters. I know that's very helpful for everyone in America.
Well, yeah, we can do the conversions. It's not that hard. Well, it is that hard, but we're going to do them anyway. 140 meters, you say. Okay, we're going to stand over here. We're by the river, and this is, of course, the Thames. What bridge are we on?
I wish I could tell you. I can't remember. I'm sorry.
All right. Red Hack's running away. I think he's running away to take a picture. I've walked across this many times. This could be London Bridge, could it not?
I think London Bridge is a different one.
Okay. Well, there's many bridges that go across the river here. We can see them going down. And I guess what we should do now is just wait. It looks like it's about 2 minutes to 7 our time. Not the time that you're listening to this radio program, but in about 2 minutes, we should hear the chimes of Big Ben. But again, to point out, we're standing right next to it. It's not going to be as loud as you might think it's going to be. That's just one of the fictions of London life. Anyway, Russell, to get back to your talk, when is that going to be held? Because some people might want to listen to the conference over the internet. Some people listening to this radio program will be going to the conference. In fact, we'll give you information on how to get to the conference in just a moment.
I seem to remember my talk is on day two, which will be the 29th.
On Friday.
On Friday, thank you very much. At about 2 o'clock in Tent 2.
Tent 2. So we have tents for all the talks and lectures and things like that. I'm going to be giving some kind of a intro talk, I'm told. And I guess that will be on Thursday.
Yeah, it's the first talk of the entire conference.
I hope that doesn't mean it's early in the morning.
I think it is.
Well, that's just great. You know, these things always happen to me where I have to be up early in the morning. Today I had to meet you at the airport early in the morning. And tomorrow I probably have to catch a train or something. It's just always early in the morning. I mean, it's nice, you know, people are around, it's daytime and all that kind of thing, but boy, I like to stay up late at night.
Well, at least you don't have to catch a plane at 8 tomorrow morning.
Well, you do. Yeah. I'm going to take a nice leisurely train ride somewhere, because I can't leave the ground. That's part of the rules of going all the way around the world, is I'm not leaving the ground, except to walk and maybe skip a little bit. Okay, I think we're under a minute for the chimes of Big Ben to begin. And this is a sound that's heard throughout the world, and I guess it represents... Oh. I'll be quiet. All right, and there we have it. 7 chimes of the majestic tower here. And I hope that came through. It wasn't really resonating all that loudly here, and we're standing only a few feet away.
The ground wasn't shaking. The
ground was certainly not shaking. I mean, it's an emotional sound, because you've heard it all your life in one form or another, whether it's a movie, whether it's the news, whether it's, you know, something.
Yeah, and there's certainly in Britain, we hear it every day, assuming we listen to like Radio 4, one of the major newscasts, and it's played, I think it's played live each day from there. It's not just some kind of recording or anything.
That's on Radio 4?
Yeah, that's right. Suddenly, going back to the eye that we're going past now, you were saying that you're surprised at its success, but people may or may not know that there was a dome erected not too far from Greenwich, I think. It's called the Millennium Dome. And that was a complete disaster, basically. So it didn't all go well.
Why was it a disaster?
Well, fortunately, not because it fell down, but the idea was it was going to be a big museum that everybody would come to. It's like some sort of, like a modern Smithsonian or something, I don't know. But nobody really bothered going, because it's not that exciting to go to London to see a museum with lots of sponsorship in it. So they tried to reuse it a lot, but basically it lost a lot of money.
Well, I don't even know where it is. Is it near here?
Well, it's not in walking distance, no. But it's kind of on the outskirts of central London.
Never seen it.
On the east side.
But the eye does seem to be pretty successful. I see people stand. It looks like people are standing in the whatever you call the things that go around on a Ferris wheel.
They're called pods, I think. Well, I call them pods anyway.
Yeah, they're big pods.
I think it used to be sponsored by British Airways. I think they called it something. They call it like you're now going on your flight, and they call it landing and departure and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it looks like you can fit about a dozen people on those things.
Yeah, you can fit probably about 15 or more, and you can hire them out, of course. So you can stand or you can sit in the middle. It's quite nice.
Well, we're quite close to it. I mean, depending on the line size, perhaps we could take a ride on it for our listeners.
We could take a ride on it. I'm not sure. There might be a queue, but we can look and see if it's possible to actually... Maybe you're not allowed to record the Ferris wheel either. I don't know. All these things that I'm learning today.
They're pretty strict on there. I would be surprised if we can go in with all this stuff.
You don't think they'd let us in with a microphone?
Well, no, they search your bags and they kind of take stuff out, and I don't think they'd like us recording.
I don't understand that. I mean, what can you possibly glean by recording a ride on a Ferris wheel? How does that help Al-Qaeda at all?
I'm not saying it's to do with terrorism or that I understand it, but I'm just saying it's likely that it would be problematic.
Well, I just assume all the restrictions have something to do with terrorism somewhere along the line. But on that subject, maybe we could just go back over the last couple of weeks, because obviously... You know, working for the BBC and living in London, you've seen the reaction a lot closer than any of us have. What have you noticed? Have people changed? Has the mood of the city been altered in any way?
I don't think it has been altered too much. I think it's brought it to people's attention and people are aware of it. But I don't think it's changed anybody's mood. I think people are still relatively happy and they've liked what the government's done to try and fight it. Until what the police did. And so I think people are happy. They refer to it, sure, but not in a kind of fearful way. I don't think it's too much of a problem.
Okay, we're going to go down these steps here, which go down to the river, and I guess that'll get us a little bit closer to where we're heading. No, we're not going that way. We're going another way. It seems very hard to cross streets here sometimes because there are these barriers and lots of racing cars. I don't see any way to cross the street at all. You have to go all the way down there and then cross the street and come all the way back. We could. Okay, let's risk our lives on the radio.
It's not going so well.
It's not going so well because I should also point out...
Let's go down to the lights.
Yeah, the cars come on the other side of the road. And so we almost got flattened by oncoming traffic coming from a different direction than we're used to. But as far as what actually happened on those, I guess, two occasions now. Were you working at the time?
Yes, I was working. I was actually out in central London at the time of the major actual explosions. It was interesting to see how it did start off as an electrical explosion and proceed. It was an exciting situation to be in. It's not one you want.
Let's cross here.
But I don't think people were frenzied by it. It wasn't... People in general weren't involved in it. You know, there was only a relatively small number of people involved. And so everybody else was literally just commenting on what they saw in the news.
How close were you to any of the explosions on the 7th?
I don't think I was that close. Most of them happened in East London or... just east of central London, and I was on the west, so I really didn't know anything about it except for checking the internet occasionally.
But the incidents that took place last week on the 21st, one of those was within sight of the BBC, was it not?
Yeah, it was, and one of our buildings was evacuated. Not the main one, but one of our sub ones. And yeah, it did impact us, but again, I don't think anybody felt in particular danger, and so it was all right.
It must have an effect, though, to hear of buses blowing up and trains blowing up when you ride buses and trains. In New York City, that's never happened. In fact, in the United States, I don't believe anything like that has happened. We've had terrorist acts, certainly, but something so common an act as simply getting on a train hasn't really been looked upon with the kind of fear that I imagine a lot of people have now in this place. I certainly had it when I got on the first time after arriving here, but it sort of goes away. When you get involved in life, you just kind of say, you know what, I'm not going to let this bother me, because all kinds of things can happen. You can get hit by a satellite or something. There's no point. There's very little point in in getting, you know, completely caught up in these kinds of things. So hopefully that's the kind of mentality that will prevail. We won't see hysterical reactions like we've seen in the last couple of days by the police, whether here or throughout the world. We're heading back this way?
No, I've got to go.
Oh, you have to go?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Russell, it's been nice hanging out with you. And
I'll see you both at the conference, and hopefully some of the people listening to this will be at the conference too.
Yes. Remember, it's not hard to get to. We're going to give out the information now.
Excellent.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
That was our friend Russell, a listener from last week who met up with us this week. You could be the listener this week that meets up with us next week when we're at What the Hack. What the Hack is the Dutch Hacker Conference taking place in the Netherlands the weekend of the 28th, 29th, 30th, and 31st of July 2005. And if you want information, I know it's kind of late, but whose fault is that? You can go to www.whatthehack.org.
At this point, yeah. Actually, that page says it's out of date. You should go to the wiki, wiki.whatthehack.org. We'll have the most up-to-date and current information throughout the conference and in these final several days.
What kinds of things are you looking forward to at the conference, Red Hack?
Well, I'm definitely looking to meet new people, have interesting discussions, go to some talks, learn new and interesting things. And just have a good time. Enjoy myself. It'll be a nice vacation.
Certainly will be. And a lot of talks, a lot of good stuff. I think the schedule is posted online now, is it not?
The schedule in its most final form, I don't think they're going to change it much, is posted online. And you can get it in iCal format, which most calendar applications can import, which I think is interesting because then you can plan ahead of time and say, tell your computer to ring when you want to go to a talk. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. We also want to point out that the next HOPE conference will be taking place in New York the second to last weekend of July 2006. And it's going to be our sixth conference, hence it will be called HOPE number 6. And it's also taking place in 2006. So I think 6 will be our theme. This thing is so big. Red Hack, why don't you try describing it now? Because I've already failed.
Well, from a distance, it looked not that big. But just imagine that the places where you would stand, in most cases, hold 4 or 5 people. These are huge. I don't know how to... I mean, you could have a dozen people in there, and there'd still be room to walk around and look in all directions. And those are just the carriages of it. So it is enormous. So perhaps if you have your camera, we can post a picture on.
I think I'll try to do that after we actually get off the air tonight.
So we have some time left.
We do. You know, for some reason, this hour has gone very slowly. I think because we accomplished things a lot faster than we were going to, that we thought we were going to.
Right, and also, you have to account for the fact that we did have to stop for a minute to deal with going to the supervisor's office and so on. So
that's true. That added a little bit of time to the broadcast when we had to turn off our microphones. First time ever in the history of Off the Wall that we have stopped the show. Sometimes you have to stop the show when the authorities tell you to. And, unfortunately, that's just the way it worked out this time. Red Hack, you're leaving tomorrow morning, but you plan on staying out all night tonight and taking in as much of London as possible, right?
Well, I don't know how late all night is, being as... You know, most places close around 11 here, but we'll see. As long as I can, anyway.
As long as you can hold out. That's the spirit. That's what it's all about. Now, what else do you have planned on your sojourn away from the States?
Well, after this, of course, What the Hack. Then I have several days in Amsterdam where I'll just be hanging out, enjoying it, you know, a couple extra days beyond the conference.
Planning on going anywhere else other than Amsterdam?
Not on this trip. I'd like to. I'll have more European travels in the future. But for now, just I'll be in Amsterdam, and then from there I'll fly back to London for 2 hours and then back to the States. So that'll be the end of my trip. Then it's back to the grindstone.
As it is, yes, the grindstone. Well, it'll be a while before I'm back at that grindstone. I'm on a different grindstone right now, just traveling all around the place. It's kind of weird and bizarre and interesting. I met a lot of cool people on the boat. Met a lot of people in other places as well. And, of course, London's one of my favorite cities. I know the Hacker Conference will be a ton of fun as it is. And all the places to the east. I'll be heading to Berlin, Warsaw, Minsk in Belarus. And if there are any Belarusian listeners, please write to us. We'd like to hear from you. I'm not kidding, because I don't really know anybody in that city. I've been there once before, and it was a lot of fun. I'd like to wander around again, learn some more about the place. And, of course, Moscow after that. Oh, and there's the quarter hour on Big Ben. Now, we're standing much further away than we were before, and the sound actually carried pretty well.
Yeah. Definitely.
It might have even sounded louder the further away we got, but you know, it doesn't actually reach that far.
Yeah.
Just to point that out yet again. And then, of course, after Moscow, I'll be on the Trans-Mongolian Express, heading over to Ulaanbaatar, and then from there, Beijing, Shanghai, Osaka, and Tokyo, if all goes well.
Yeah, and the great thing about having internet listenership, besides real radio listenership, is that you do get listeners around the world. You know, last week when we were doing Off the Hook, we had people pledging for WBAI from, you know, Scotland and all sorts of places. So, you know, if you are out there and you're listening, you should definitely write otw@2600.com.
otw@2600.com. That is our email address, and we do look forward to hearing from people. We tend to get a lot less mail at OTW than we do at OTH, which is the Off the Hook program. And, well, obviously, the radio station there has a bigger reach, and we've been on for a longer period of time. And we talk about, I guess, more fast-paced things. This is sort of the leisurely show, where we just kind of wax philosophical for an hour and do various things that we haven't tried before, like wandering around the underground as we're on the air and not even succeeding at that. Your letters will definitely be read. So if you're in one of these other places that I'm going to be heading to, again, otw@2600.com. That's 2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Well, what else is there? We have our travel plans pretty much laid out. I should point out, Off the Hook will not be on this week. Unfortunately, we were preempted, which I don't know. I question the wisdom of that, especially at a time when we're trying to raise funds. But that's a decision of the station, one that I can't really do anything about. And we're sorry to those listeners who lived up to their end and pledged in the first 10 minutes of the show. I'm sorry we won't be able to bring you a show this week. It would have been a good one. It would have been our show from the Hacker Conference. And what we're going to do instead is put something together with Off the Wall and have a kind of special program where we're talking to people at the conference. And that will be coming your way a week from tonight, if we make it over there safely and there's no further involvement with the authorities. I think we're just about at the end of our time.
Yeah.
I was going to say it sure went fast, but it really didn't go fast this time, I guess because of the hassles we had trying to record this program. It was fun. It was unusual. It was different. Are we going to go on this thing, this huge Ferris wheel?
I think so. I think we should get online. Or I don't know. I think you have to buy tickets, or I don't understand how this works.
Well, I'm sure it costs something. It probably costs a great deal, because everything in London is very expensive, especially for Americans, where the exchange rate is awful.
Yeah.
A pound is about $2 now. So a ride on the underground cost £2. So imagine that. That's about $4 for Americans. Doesn't seem to hurt the British as much as it hurts us. So I imagine this thing is probably going to be about $100 or something. we'll just have to see. But if it is, we're going to make the most out of it. Well, I guess that's going to do it for us this week. Hopefully you got something out of this program. I know we did. If anything, I learned how people look at you when you hold a big microphone. This doesn't have to be plugged into anything. And yet everybody assumes that I'm actually broadcasting, I guess, to millions of people someplace, which may well be the case, but it's just strange how certain things evoke reactions. For instance, if you walk around the crowd and you have a boom pole, you know, that's what professionals use to hold microphones over people's heads, well, you can pretty much get anywhere. It's that simple. We have a sort of a crowd of people around us right now just staring because I'm talking into this microphone in my hand. I should figure out a way to use this to my advantage. With that thought, I'd like to close with this song from one of my favorite bands, one of my favorite British bands called Dread Zone. And I think it kind of brings up the spirit that lingers here in London after things like this have happened. Sort of brings to mind the reasons why people like it here, and the reasons why people... Are we not allowed to use a microphone here? Are we not allowed to use a microphone here? Oh dear, where does the private property end? Okay, well, we'll go that way then. All right, sorry to have bothered you. Okay. Well, we've been kicked out of the Ferris wheel because we're holding a microphone. This is insane. But the thing is, when you're in a foreign country, you have to obey the rules, no matter how crazy they are. All right, as I was saying, this song, which I'm closing with right now, they sent in the choppers for us. How about that? This song brings to mind some things that I just feel a lot of times, despite the idiocy. This is Dread Zone with Little Britain. We'll see you again next week.
In this green and pleasant land, we have a dream to understand. In the mountains of the mind, there is a spirit you will find. Just like an angel from above, sent to deliver words of love. Ancient cross and Zion star, eastern winds and breeze to jump. This is our on a merry dance.